Go ahead and kick off this month's meeting of the Orange County Veterans Advisory Council. And so we are called to order. Bobby, would you be so kind as to take us through the Pledge of Allegiance, please, sir?
Okay. If you all want to stand, you can. If you want to sit, you can see the flag behind you. So forgive my back. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right.
I have a chance to use my flag. You have another flag up there. Oh, man.
They're on the ball, Bobby.
That's all right. Hey, you know what? I'm learning to live with uniqueness, okay?
Okay, Carissa, would you take us through the roll call, please?
Yes. Vladimir Anderson. Eric Dwayne.
Here.
Alexis Federico.
Here.
David Hahn.
Here.
Alex Maslin.
Here.
Robert McDonald.
Here.
Mario Munoz.
Here.
And Stephanie Wade. Okay, so we do have quorum.
Very nice.
There she is. I see her.
Stephanie, hey, Stephanie. Present. Okay, the next item on the agenda for today is the public comments. At this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. Did we receive any public comments for today?
We did not.
Okay. All right. So
I do believe Kate Emmons is here. I think she had something to say. She's from VLI, but she might want to, her comments concern the LGBT related discharge letter. So we might want to wait and have her comments then.
I'm happy to speak whenever is convenient for you guys.
Thanks, Kate.
Afternoon.
Erica, is there an issue with that?
Sorry, I can't unmute fast enough. During public comment would be appropriate.
Okay. Kate, you have 3 minutes if you like.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to talk today. Stephanie and Alexis and Bobby have already done a really good job outlining the issues that our LGBT community faces in dealing with the discharge upgrade board. So I'm only here to sort of echo what they have already said, but also just to lend a little bit of color to some of the experiences that we're seeing. So one of the things that was brought up was that these boards are typically taking 18 months to process these decisions. We're actually seeing it to be more 2 to 3 years. In some cases, these are very straightforward decisions where we're simply asking for a correction of name and gender on the DD-214 form in order to avoid stigma and harassment based on transgender status. We know the boards are underfunded and understaffed, but they also lack clear guidance on how to process these applications, which results in an increased amount of discretion and discretionary abuse in some cases. I know at one board, this is anecdotal, but one board in at least 2 instances has been requesting copies of proof of gender reassignment surgery from transgender service members, as opposed to accepting proof that they've had their name and gender changed by court order. That's unnecessary. It's not required for the claim, and it's also unnecessarily invasive and offensive. And also seems to indicate a clear transphobic culture at these boards. Additionally, because they don't have clear guidance by statute or by memo, we're seeing things like them shutting down applications administratively because they're unable to access records due to ongoing closures at the National Personnel Records Center due to COVID. Getting a copy of a military service record or service treatment records is unnecessary for an application that should be straightforward, such as a name or gender change. So to use that method to sort of administratively close these matters that are already taking up to 3 years is indicative of a systemic problem. So we believe that they need additional statutory guidance and they need additional DOD guidance in the interim while the statutes are being corrected to allow for a more streamlined process. And I think that takes me to 3 minutes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kate. Appreciate your comments and perspective and insight on this issue. That brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is the LBGT discharge upgrades and corrections letter. It was sent out to all the council members prior to this meeting. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at it and read through it? Pretty much. Okay. So at this time, we can discuss the letter. I've read through it. I think Bobby and Alexis and Stephanie did an outstanding job on it. They put a lot of work and effort into researching it and crafting the letter. So kudos to them. I think, like I said, they did a really good job on it. The discussion. Do we want to go down the roll and do it that way?
We could do that. Vladimir Anderson.
Can you hear me? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Are there any other guidelines being offered by the department, like the DOD or any other agency at this point? Directing the a proper protocol or process to be followed?
I could lend something to that, but I would wonder if I wouldn't give Kate the floor again, because she's a practitioner in this field. She deals with it all the time. Can we unmute Kate? Kate, can you come back? There she is.
I'm still here. So there is guidance with regards to specific conditions such as PTSD, discrimination, traumatic brain injury, and military sexual trauma, which are also very common in the LGBT community. However, when it comes to things such as transgender status and getting a name and gender corrected, it comes across as very straightforward. The boards tell you all you need is, you know, a court order, your DD-214, and any other supporting documents. But then they say that each application will be considered on its own merits. And there's no DOD guidance to determine what those merits are that I've seen. I haven't seen any proposed. There's no further guidance with regards to that specific issue. And I'm not familiar with any specific guidance, so I imagine there must be some out there, though it's old, regarding the don't ask, don't tell issues. And I think they kind of lumped that in with the more recent memos starting from what we call the Hagel memo in the community. We've got the Hagel, the Curta, Carson, and the Wilkie memos, which dictate how the boards are supposed to handle mental health issues and discrimination.
So at this point, we will be setting, creating a status. Is there any other council or any other group that has taken this position or addressed this issue specifically?
I can tell you that the Modern Military Association of America, which is the LGBT group most directly involved with the broad spectrum of LGBT military organizing and lobbying. They've been deeply involved in this. Their national director has been lobbying Congresswoman Spears, who's the chair of the House Armed Services Personnel Committee to take this up. And it's been interesting to watch because essentially it's a process question, you know, with great goodwill. The don't ask, don't tell was repealed. But, you know, as Kate was pointing out, there are lots of troubles for transgender people that aren't even addressed by the president's recent order. So when don't ask, don't tell was repealed and was no longer in effect in 2011, I think the assumption was, well, we've taken away the ban, people can apply for upgrades if they were kicked out because they were gay. But only, as the letter points out, only 8% of those people that were eligible for it, who were involuntarily separated for being gay, even bothered to apply. And then as Kate was pointing out, since there isn't any specific guidance on how to do this and each service is responsible for its own corrections and appeals process, there is no specific guidance written by Congress or the executive. And even the president's most executive order is very vague, and it only applies to transgender service members. So this is really just sort of trying to raise the point that we've done the right thing in repealing these bans, but we haven't given the services the guidance or the process to do it better. And also pointing out that and it's asking the supervisor simply to say that, you know, we know that there are transgender and lesbian and gay and bisexual service members who, you know, whose discharges are adversely affected living right here in Orange County. We would like to see our legislators look for a better process. And in pursuing that better process, as the letter points out, the problem, Kate mentioned that a lot of these boards are sort of culturally insensitive, because typically who serves on the board are retired military officers who are much older and have no particular cultural competence in this area. So if we could train people, you know, if there could be a process at DOD where these simple changes that are very administrative could be handled by, you know, a bureaucrat, to simply say, oh yeah, that's clear. There was no non-judicial punishment involved. It was simply that this person was kicked out for being gay, or this person simply has a court-ordered name change, and, you know, and it relates to them being transgender. And so it's a potential issue of, and not potential, it creates opportunities for employment discrimination. So we should just change the DD-214. What that could do for the Pentagon is make their job a lot easier, because then, you know, you don't have to send, my package was about 20 pages. And that's just to change my name. That's it. And we just got back, well, we can't do that until we see your entire service record book. What does that have to do with anything? And there isn't any specific guidance saying that we need that. So now I'm supposed to wait until COVID is over to change my DD-214. So that's all we're saying. We're sort of suggesting that this process doesn't meet the expectations, and we're asking the supervisors to take a stand on that on behalf of LGBT folks right here in Orange County who've asked for it.
Okay. And what other councils besides Orange County, are there any other entities that are headed by the Board of Supervisors, let's say, that have taken this position?
LA is considering it, I know right now. I don't know anyone else at this point that is.
In the Bay Area, the Board of Supervisors in the Bay Area haven't addressed it at all?
I don't know that they have.
Okay. Oh, we don't know that they have or haven't. We'd have to have connections to if they have a Veterans Advisory Council in the county of San Francisco, and I don't know if we do.
And I would be interested to know what kind of language was used if they did take this issue, attempted to address it somehow. What kind of language is in their document that was communicated to the Board of Supervisors? Excuse me. I'm just interested in that. I guess I'll Google it.
It would be interesting to know, but you know, I don't think we need that in order to be able to move forward with this. Does anyone else think that we need to see what other boards or councils have done?
Please, David, I'm recommending that we see a document. It's just for my information.
Okay.
No further questions.
Okay, Vice Chair Duane.
Follow the question?
Just if you had any comments or questions or concerns about the letter.
I'm going to vote to approve it. That's all I got.
Okay.
Alexis.
So I obviously strongly support this. I think that there is definitely a guidance and quite possibly or probably a new change in procedure that's needed to address these wrongs. And I wanted to thank Kate for her informed comments. And then of course the other members of the ad hoc committee, Stephanie and Bobby, for their hard work on this.
And Chair Hong.
I support this. I support it. I think it shouldn't be needed, but in the absence of policy and procedures being sent down to the services and to the VA, I think we need to send a signal and to say that, you know, this needs to be done. It should have been done already. We shouldn't have to, you know, have members that are veterans that are not able to access the benefits that they deserve and have earned. So.
And Alex Maslin.
Yeah, I support it, and thank you to everyone for putting it together.
I'm sorry, are we taking a vote now?
No, it's just the comments discussion.
And Bobby.
Yeah, I'm going to support it, needless to say. I want to thank Alexis and Stephanie for allowing me to be part of the committee. I would like to address just my thoughts. Vladimir, you made a comment about, is anybody else doing it? We really don't have to worry about anybody else doing it if we're taking the lead, right? I mean, your question is fine, see if somebody else is doing it. But you know, the thing is, it's about else, but then again, we really don't need anybody else to help make a decision or move the agenda. So, but anyway, thank you. And that's my comments.
Okay. And Mario?
If for any reason this does not get approved or this does not move forward, what would be the next course of action? Would it be legal, or is there a plan, or is this right now what we're starting off with?
You mean from the Veterans Advisory Council standpoint?
Moving this issue forward.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Erica, but all we can do is make recommendations to the board. It's up to them. It's up to the Orange County Legislative Board to review what we've put. If we put it forward, it's up to them to review what we put forward and then get it on the agenda to be able to discuss with the supervisors.
Mr. Chair, may I add something to that, please?
Please.
Mario, we do know that, and when you get into the report, we do know that the CalVet Secretary, Dr. Imbasciani, and the group at CalVet, both the minority veterans and the women's veterans, they're all on board with to move the agenda for the LGBTQ community. So what we're doing is just helping move in the ball that's already being moved. I mean, other people, and again, I no disrespect, Vladimir, but the point is we know about what's happening up in Colorado, I mean, up in California, up the state. We're just helping move the ball, okay?
Perfect, then ditto.
Thank you.
And to answer your question, Chair Hahn, that's correct. So OCVAC, as an advisory council extension of the Orange County Board of Supervisors, you can make a recommendation to the board to support it as you outlined in the letter. You're requesting for a process. And so the next step would be to, you know, for someone to move the recommendation, which would be to approve the letter as it's written, unless there's any edits, and then submit it to our department, OC Community Services. We would work with CEO Legislative Affairs, which is the county's designated department, that reads the letter, analyzes it to make sure that it aligns with the board's legislative platform, and then makes the recommendation to the board for their support.
Chairman Hahn, if it's yes. Okay, I'll move the recommendation to move the move it forward, please.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All right, so we will move the letter forward. I'll go ahead and sign it, and then I'll get it sent over. I send it to you first, Erica, right?
And I'll just, Chair Hahn, I'll just go through. Yeah, I'll just go through the roll, and then assuming everyone votes for it, then or we have unanimous, well, then we can approve it. So we'll start with Vladimir Anderson.
Aye.
Eric Duane.
Aye.
Alexis Federico.
Aye.
David Hahn.
Aye.
Alex Maslin.
Aye.
Robert McDonald.
Aye.
Mario Munoz.
Aye.
And Stephanie Wade.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries.
Okay, very nice. All right, next up on the agenda is our guest speaker, Senior Deputy County Counsel John Cleveland. He'll go over the orientation of the bylaws. And this will be done annually, so.
All right, good morning, thank you. My name is John Cleveland, Senior Deputy County Counsel of the County of Orange. The Office of County Counsel serves as legal counsel to the county. And I'm excited here to go over your bylaws. Some of this will be reviewed, no doubt, but hopefully everyone will take away a couple of new points. I'm going to share my screen with the bylaws. Can everyone see my PowerPoint presentation?
Yes.
Okay, great. So today's agenda, we'll have about a 30-minute review of the bylaws. As we discuss the bylaws, we're going to touch on a couple of other documents like the legislative policy guidelines that you just mentioned, the role of the County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs, the county's legislative platform, and the County Code of Ethics. And following the review, there will be 15 or 20 minutes for questions and answers. If any of your questions require research or they're of a particularly sensitive nature, staff can coordinate further discussions with the Office of County Council, and staff's here to address operational concerns that I might not be familiar with. So with that, let's jump right in to Article 1, which covers the name, purpose, and function of the OCVAC. Well aware of the name, the purpose is to advise the board on issues that are important to veterans in Orange County. The OCVAC is, according to the bylaws, is set up at no cost to the county. Another purpose is to address equal economic and political opportunity for OC veterans, to protect the dignity and integrity of OC veterans, and to keep abreast of legislation that affects veterans' rights and provide recommendations and input to the board in accordance with the board's legislative policy guidelines. So this sounds like a particularly timely bullet point for your discussions. And we'll touch on the legislative policy guidelines in a little bit more detail in a subsequent slide. Another purpose is to seek justice for veterans before the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and California Department of Veterans Affairs, two issues that you seem to be working on right now. So let's talk about the county's Legislative Affairs Program guidelines and the role of the County Executive Office Legislative Affairs in a little bit more detail. The basic premise is that the County Board of Supervisors manages the county and directs its legislative efforts, and also has the authority to make policy decisions on behalf of the county. To that end, the board has put together a legislative affairs policy guidelines that serve as a protocol to the county. And councils like OCVAC, and even individual board members or employees of the county are not allowed to state their position is one of on behalf of the entire county unless the majority of the board has approved it. The idea being, of course, that the majority of the board is the only entity that can act on behalf of the board and the county. The County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs is a lead department for the county on legislative efforts. Provides analysis and input to the board and advises the board on how to best protect the county's interests. County Executive Legislative Affairs also puts together the county's legislative affairs platform, which is a two-year platform that coincides with the legislative cycle, and it communicates the county's key legislative priorities, provides policy direction and guidance to departments and staff. CEOLA also considers legislative issues and recommendations and helps departments and the county decide whether positions on such issues are inconsistent with the county's legislative platform or maybe not included in that platform. So we'll get to that platform in just a second. So CEOLA is established to help the county maintain a consistent position on legislative issues. And those guidelines that we were just talking about state that no policy or action may be taken by a department on any legislation which is in conflict with board policy, the guidelines, or the platform. Those guidelines also provide that the role of OCVAC, like other boards and commissions, is to advise the board, and as opposed to advise other agencies, other elected officials outside of the county as an independent source of recommendations. So recommendations should be made only to the board, and those recommendations are made in connection and in cooperation with OCCDR and CEOLA. Departments will work through CEOLA on positions on legislation, and departments should route written correspondence on that's going to be submitted on behalf of the county through CEOLA. So let's move on to the county's legislative platform for 21 and 22. It identifies certain veterans' priorities and issues. Of course, supporting funding for veterans' needs. There was an identified issue and priority of increasing funding for access to the Veterans Affairs database and training and funding for VSO officers. I understand that there recently were new VSO officers hired, so that's great. Veterans housing is also a priority, and increasing funding for veteran services and helping to ensure that veterans receive their maximum benefits that they're entitled to. Each of those is a pretty broad category. And so a lot of, I think what OCVAC is doing is going to be, it's gonna fall into those general umbrellas. And it's important to coordinate with CEOLA to make sure that your efforts line up with the county's efforts. Okay, let's move on to Article 1C, OCVAC functions. There's a laundry list of functions here. I won't read them all to you, and you're well aware of them and performing them, but the common theme that I see is that OCVAC is tasked with learning about veterans' issues in Orange County, making recommendations and findings regarding those issues and reporting those issues to the board, as well as providing information to the community to help veterans. Article 1D is pretty self-explanatory. In a nutshell, the bylaws provide that OCVAC will not discriminate in any way or in any form under any laws, regulations, or ordinances. Okay, Article 2. Covers appointment and membership. Obviously, the Board of Supervisors appoints members to OCVAC. Article 2B1 states the composition, required composition of OCVAC. As you know, there's 9 members who are veterans of honorable discharge and OC residents. There's also a procedure where supervisors may nominate within their district or outside of their district, and 4 council members are appointed by the board at large. Article 2B covers term of appointments. The term for appointments is 2 years. If there's a vacancy, the new member appointed steps into the shoes of that remaining appointment term and serves for the remaining term. The nominating authority will consider service beyond 2 years at the end of the term. And generally, a member may serve until reappointed or replaced. That helps ensure continuation of services, even in the event of a vacancy. So Article 2B, key points, members serve for 2 years, but may continue to serve unless reappointed or replaced by their appointing authority. Article 3A covers duties and authority for OCVAC officers. So let's start with the chairperson's duties and authority. They include the items listed here. I won't read all of them, but generally presiding over the meetings and deciding points of order within those meetings, appointing and removing committee chairpersons, calling special meetings, and designating or representing OCVAC at public functions. If the chair's position becomes vacant, they can appoint a vice chair. If the vice chairperson position becomes vacant, they may appoint a vice chairperson for the remainder of that term. Similarly, the vice chairperson will step into the shoes of the chairperson in the event of a chairperson's vacancy and will perform the duties of the chairperson in the event of an absence. The secretary's duties shall be performed by staff as a non-voting member. Okay, Article 3B and 3C cover the term of office and elections for OCFAC members. The term for OCFAC officers is 1 year. The ad hoc committee appoints nomination there's a ad hoc nominating committee for OCFAC officers, but the chair will also be able to accept nominations for the floor before a vote of officers, and officers shall serve until they are replaced by their successors. Article 4 covers elections. Nominations will be accepted at the June and July meeting. The county's on a fiscal year, June being the last month of that fiscal year, July being the first month. Elections of officers are held at OCFAC's July meeting. Each officer must be elected by an affirmative vote of the majority of the council. Article 6 covers removal and resignation of members. The chairperson may recommend to the Board of Supervisors that a member be removed for cause or absenteeism. Removal for cause means that the member is no qualifications have changed such that they are materially different from when they were originally appointed, or circumstances exist that interfere with an individual's ability to properly function as a member. Removal for absenteeism is based on three consecutive absences from a regular OCFAC meeting or a standing committee meeting. OCFAC members may resign by providing written notice to the chairperson and to the board. And in the event of a vacancy, the chairperson must notify the clerk of the board within 10 days of learning of that vacancy. And that's so the clerk of the board can take appropriate steps to document the vacancy and find initiate steps to find a replacement. Okay, OCFAC committees. The OCFAC committees can comprise of the OCFAC officers, the committee chairs, and the immediate past chairperson of OCFAC. Standing committees, there's two standing committees, the Veterans Communications Committee and the Veterans Events Outreach Committee. The terms for appointment are 1 year for each of those committees. Ad hoc committees can also be formed. The chairperson may establish an ad hoc committee to complete time-limited tasks. That's an important point because the Brown Act requires ad hoc committees to be limited in purpose and time. And committees can use consultants if needed. And it's important to note that if consultants were to be used, they don't receive any compensation and they are subject to conflicts of interest standards. Okay, Article 8, meetings and actions. OCFAC is required to adopt a schedule of regular meetings at its first meeting of the year and to publish that schedule to the public. All OCFAC meetings are subject to the Brown Act. They must be open, public, and noticed. They also must be held at a facility that complies with the American with Disabilities Act. And special meetings may also be called by the chairperson or majority of the OCFAC. Special meeting notices must go out according to the requirements of the Brown Act. The bylaws basically reiterate Brown Act's requirements of 24 hours notice and stating the business to be considered at that special meeting. Okay. Quorum and voting, Article 8D. The bylaws define quorum for different types of meetings. For general meetings, the quorum is 50% of the membership plus one. For executive committee meetings, the quorum is defined as 50% of the committee plus one. And for standing ad hoc committees, quorum is defined as the members present, but no less than three. Generally, the decisions and acts of OCFAC are made by a majority vote of the members at a duly constituted meeting. So obviously there needs to be a quorum in order to act. And let me just add that the item up for action needs to be properly agendized for Brown Act purposes. Abstentions are not considered a yes or no. It's considered a non-vote. And let's move on to Article 8D3, conflicts of interest, political advocacy, and the use of county assets. The bylaws generally prevent and prohibit conflicts of interest, and the bylaws spell out exactly what that means in a little bit more detail. It means abstaining on votes in which members will be personally interested, avoiding conflicts of interest violations that are prohibited under the law, and even going further, refraining and engaging in behavior that conflicts with the best interests of the county. Members shall not vote or attempt to influence any member on a matter under consideration by OCFAC regarding a provision of services by such member or the member's family or representatives that would provide a direct financial benefit to such member or its immediate family, or engage in the other activity determined by the county or local, state, or federal law to constitute a conflict of interest. So kind of recap on that. The bylaws are pretty comprehensive when it comes to conflicts of interest. And if you ever do have a potential conflict of interest, please err on the side of caution. You can reach out to staff, and staff can consult with county council. We can set up a meeting to discuss the facts and specifics of any of your concerns. If you ever have a financial interest that you're acting on as a member of OCFAC, that's a kind of a red flag, and you want to step back, make sure that you don't take action on anything where you are personally interested or the action or vote you're taking could benefit you in a personal way. The bylaws also address political advocacy. OCFAC and none of its members may promote or take political action. They may not advocate for a political candidate or a ballot measure or take action in the name of OCFAC. And that kind of goes back to what we originally were talking about with the legislative platform, CEO Legislative Affairs, coordinating legislative efforts, and really the Board of Supervisors being the entity that is going to take political action on behalf of the county. If you are ever concerned about the line between your personal political activity and your activity while wearing the hat of an OCFAC member, again, please feel free to reach out to staff and county council, and we can help discuss the facts of your situation and make sure that you're able to exercise your own free speech rights and political rights without wearing the OCFAC hat or involving the county in a way that's prohibited under the bylaws. The bylaws also address sectarian worship. We're going to get to use of county assets a little bit more on the next slide, but generally, you can't use county assets or time to advocate for personal positions or sectarian worship. So let's go to the next slide. The county code of ethics is applicable to boards, commissions, and councils like OCFAC, and it really supports and reinforces a lot of what the bylaws just addressed. But let's talk about it briefly. It was last amended in 2016, and it serves as a standard for county officers and employees in the performance of their duties. And with respect to the code of ethics and ethical provisions in those in that code, it prohibits the use of public property for public benefit and engaging in activities that would create or impair an officer's independence of judgment in the performance of his or her duties, engaging in political advocacy or activity while wearing the commission's hat, the council's hat, And this is a bit of an odd one, but it also prohibits meeting and conferring with a former county employee or officer who's now acting as a lobbyist within 1 year of employment. I doubt that comes up very often, but I thought I'd just mention it. Okay, Article 9, public comment. I'm sure the public comment rules are old news to you, and I don't need to get into them in detail, but just to recap, public comments are required at the meetings. The meetings are governed by the Brown Act. The bylaws echo the requirements of the Brown Act in terms of when and public comments must be allowed and your ability to reasonably limit the time frame for public comments. Article 10, authority to act and delegated authority. Just real quick, Robert's Rules of Order govern OCFAC meetings, unless those rules, which are quite comprehensive, are inconsistent with the bylaws or other laws, regulations, or ordinances. And then Article 10 goes into the two delegated authority scenarios. The first one involves a permissive delegation of authority to committees, where there's basically three commissions. OCFAC may delegate authority to a commission when the circumstances demand action before the next OCFAC meeting. And the OCFAC authorizes or grants authority to that committee to act on its behalf for the specific and limited purpose of making recommendations to the county. So you need circumstances demanding action, an actual authorization by OCFAC at a meeting, and the delegation will be limited to making specific and limited recommendations to the county. Another delegation of authority scenario in the bylaws is a standing delegation of authority to the executive committee. And that really has kind of two requirements. The first is when there are unforeseen circumstances that demand action before the next OCFAC meeting. In other words, you can't know an issue is coming up and have the delegation of authority to the executive committee be valid. There needs to be some sort of almost emergency, unforeseen circumstance pop up, and the executive committee is authorized to take action on behalf of OCFAC in that scenario. When that happens, OCFAC members must be notified within 72 hours, and the action is subject to review and ratification at the next OCFAC meeting, which means that the action taken is somewhat conditional because it does require ratification. The bylaws also spell out that committees' authority is limited, independent. The committees themselves don't have independent authority, and that OCFAC as a whole needs to approve of actions or policies taken by committees. Okay, Article 11, adoption and amendment of the bylaws. Members of the executive committee may propose amendments to the bylaws. It's important that the membership receive the proposed amendments at least 5 days in advance to allow time to review. And the bylaws provide that 2/3 of the members present at any regular meeting may amend the bylaws. The bylaws get into adoption and say that at least a majority of those voting is required for adoption. And the bylaws that may be amended and adopted cannot be effective until approval by the Board of Supervisors. That concludes my review. And I would like to thank everyone for their service to our country and to the county, and open it up for questions.
I have a quick question. I know we discussed the composition of ad hoc and standing subcommittees. Is there any limitation to the maximum number of members on those committees?
Yes, that's a great question. The Brown Act governs the number allowed. A ad hoc committee needs to be less than a quorum. Did I address your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks.
John. So I would like a little clarification on delegation of authority. Could you give us some practical examples of when we might be delegating authority and when we might be tempted to do it in a way that doesn't apply to the board's authority?
We could think together. I'm sure staff who have experience in these scenarios may have additional thoughts, but let's see. So, you know, an emergency situation. Let's look at a delegation of authority to the executive committee. That's the standing delegation. We will need unforeseen circumstances, and then maybe an attack on the U.S. And it requires action to the delegation commences when there's unforeseen circumstances that demand action before the next OCBAC meeting. So, you know, if the OCBAC wanted to issue a statement on, you know, another attack like the World Trade Center, I could see that delegation coming into being, into effect. Let's look at the other delegation. Delegation to a committee. So, same scenario, there's been another unfortunate attack on the U.S. and OCBAC wants to get a statement out before the next regular OCBAC meeting in order to be effective and to message to the community. Then I think we would have circumstances that demand action before the next OCBAC meeting. And OCBAC would need to grant the committee that authorization to act on its behalf. And then the committee would be able to make recommendations to the county. And that's just specifying the exact scope of authority. The committee wouldn't necessarily be issuing a letter out to the Department of Defense, but it'd be making recommendations to the county.
So in essence, this probably doesn't apply to us very often. I mean, as an advisory board, there aren't many extremist situations where we have any authority that we'd want to delegate. I mean, it is, you gave, I think, some practical examples if there was suddenly something we needed to communicate something about.
Yeah, I'm not sure. When I read this, I was really wondering how often these delegations come up, but you might be able to use it more in the future. You know, depending on what activities are going on, like the current recommendation that you're working on, if for some reason you think that it's important to make a recommendation to the board as part of this legislative process that might be happening in the future on LGBTQ rights. And you might set up some sort of delegation where if you think things can't wait to the next meeting and you need to take advantage of this and act quickly, you might be able to make a recommendation to the county. The committee might be able to make a recommendation to the county under this delegation.
I got you. That makes sense. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Well, thank you, sir, for coming and go ahead.
Just one other question for John. So for instance, something like the letter, can that be shared? For instance, you know, Vladimir was pointing out that might be of interest to other stakeholders who are working on the same issue. Can that be shared or is that privileged? I mean, it was public here, but can we share the letter once it's been approved?
You know, my initial reaction is that letter is a recommendation to the board and there is that rule that says that the OCBAC is supposed to advise the board as opposed to go ahead and start issuing it in recommendations and advisories outside of the county. So I would follow the protocol of working through OCCR, COLA, and then the board.
Okay, that makes sense. That's why I asked.
Yeah, good question.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Possibility we can get a copy of this PowerPoint?
Is that possible, Mr. Cleveland?
It's been emailed to us.
Yeah, the bylaws were just emailed to you. I asked for them earlier.
Not the bylaws, about the presentation we got.
Understood, but the presentation is a copy and paste from the bylaws. It's exactly word for word from the bylaws. That's my
point. That's not true. I saw a couple things that are different. That's why I was asking.
Okay.
That's fine with me. Erica, is that all right with you?
Absolutely. And we can send that out on your behalf, John, if that's okay. I've got a copy of it.
Yeah, that sounds good. Appreciate that. There are some apologize for any cutting and pasting, but they're a little truncated. It will save you a little bit of time.
Thank you, sir. All right, with that, we'll move on to, the council comments portion. Carissa, if you can take us through.
Sorry, let me just unmute. Okay, we'll go with Vladimir.
I have no comments.
Eric Dwayne.
Just one of personal pride. Obviously, if you could see my wallpaper, we have the latest generation of Dwaynes down at the depot. As much as I try to get him to go to college first, he's down there in quarantine for COVID. Yeah, super exciting. Also very exciting that he's going to be at the depot at a time when the first female recruit training platoon will be on deck as well. So he's going to be part of history.
Wow.
And the next generation. So thoughts, prayers, incense, kumbayas, please, for recruit Mason Dwayne. And thank you.
Outstanding. Semper Fi.
Alexis.
So I think there were a couple of us that had a really great visit with San Diego VSO, and I think learned a lot, and our Orange County VSO reps were also able to share some information. And I think we're going to meet next Tuesday with the San Bernardino VSO, and I'm just looking forward to again learning and seeing where we can take advantage of, you know, different opportunities and resource and lessons learned through the different VSOs. So a big thank you to Alex for organizing that.
Outstanding.
Chair Hahn.
Okay, so we have had one resignation from the council recently. Dale Softner has resigned. So I just wanted to let everybody know that. And then I guess we need to notify the clerk of the board since we just reviewed the bylaws and that was in there. Okay. Well, that's all I have. I don't have any other comments.
Okay. Alex Maslin.
I don't have anything yet. I believe both the things I was going to talk about are in agenda items a little later.
And Bobby McDonald.
Hi, I want to say as a true member of the Department of the Navy, I'm happy to be with all my Marine Corps brethren on the Yeah, I was going to take a shot at all you guys. You're doggone right.
Heck yeah.
But anyway, somebody's got to be the adult in the room. I get it. Hey, somebody's got to be the adult.
No crayon eaters, right?
Appreciated working with Stephanie and Alexis on the LGBT group things, and I'm still glad to see that we're leading forward, making stuff happen. Okay, thank you.
And Mario Munoz.
Two things. One was because of a personal experience. The VA Medical Center has emergency use doses of the vaccine. Let's see. I tried getting a COVID test at the Santa Ana VA Medical Center, but because my provider is in Long Beach, I couldn't. So Long Beach is now doing drive-through. What my doctor told me is that I don't even have to call. I can just show up and they'll go ahead and take care of me in Long Beach, which is not the case at the Santa Ana VA Medical Center, which you do have to set up an appointment and get approval. The second thing was I called two veteran resource centers during their normal hours of operation, and I could not get a hold of anyone. The only reason why I got a hold of someone is because I know somebody that works there and I have them as a friend on social media. So I think that's going to be my task this month. I'm going to see if access is being limited to veterans because of this whole COVID situation. I understand that they're not working right now, or they're not physically present at their office. But what can I do, and how long is it taking for veterans to get access to benefits, you know, being that the semester just started?
We're talking about the BRCs?
BRCs.
Okay.
Stephanie.
First off, I you know, as a very proud member of what Bobby frequently now refers to as the U.S. Marine Corps Veterans Advisory Council, I wanted to congratulate Mason Duane on joining the gun club. That's outstanding. And then I wanted to say thank you to the entire board for supporting this letter. I think but I also in particular wanted to thank Alexis and Bobby for being such great colleagues. You know, they made the letter much, much, much better. I mean, a lot of detailed suggestions. They really took their time on it, and I really appreciated that. And then the other thing is, I just wanted to let Chairman Han know and see if he possibly will want to agendize it. At last month's meeting, I was asked to reach out to folks who could address making us smarter about veterans housing. And I spoke to Richard Omens, who works at VHA on veterans housing issues, and he would like to address the OCVAC at our next council meeting, if that's something that the council would like to do.
So from my standpoint, I think that would be a great suggestion.
Okay. That's all. Oh, and Alex did a great job, not only just at yesterday's meeting, but also at the previous one with the folks at the National Guard for Sunburst Academy. So I'm really glad that he's doing that outreach. It's been terrific. Thank you, Alex. That's all I have.
Thank you.
And that's all the members.
Okay, so this month's meeting is obviously much shorter than the previous ones. We didn't have a lot of time to cover some of the agenda items that we normally would have. So next month we'll have to go further into the VSO visit subcommittee and also the community outreach subcommittee, Alex. Okay. And with that, we will adjourn this month's meeting of the Orange.
Please, I did not see the agenda. I didn't get an opportunity, but I have a. I'll be forwarding to all the, if at all possible, all the board members, the recent document provided by the federal government with all the contacts for all the governmental agencies throughout the nation. I'll forward that to the to Carissa and have her disseminate that to everyone. It's a PDF form that can be easily downloaded, but I'm trying to create, place it on like on a website, on a Google Doc that is easily accessible.
All right, thanks a lot.
I didn't know we were-
And I'm sorry, can I-
Go ahead.
Can I jump in real quick? I apologize. I thought that there was some agenda items as far as our Sunburst visit. But if not, if I don't want to take up too much time, we can talk more about the VSO visits and the Sunburst later. Just a couple quick points on that. In talking with their staff, as other members have mentioned already, kind of tentatively plan on a possible visit to their facility sometime in March if we're able to organize it, obviously, in a safe manner. Where we can go when the students aren't present, at least at the locations we'd be touring. So just something to think about if anyone is interested in going to that. And then the second thing was kind of the number one thing I took away from the Sunburst visit as far as how veterans can connect with that program is every student there is required to have a mentor who they meet with up to a year after they've completed the program. And they're always in search of mentors. And I think that would be an easy fit for a veteran, hopefully for obvious reasons, to give back and help out. And so that I will send out an email through either you or Erica with the link information on how to look into becoming a mentor. And the second thing was, these are National Guard folks that are staffing a lot of these positions. And one of the points that the major that we spoke with brought up was that it's a great opportunity for someone who either has prior National Guard service, prior active duty service, to get back into the mix in kind of a less traditional military role at the Sunburst Academy, helping out with them. So if somebody's looking to go back into service, but in a bit of a different way, like I said, a little more unconventional, working for the program they have there, that's something else that they are always looking for volunteers for. And we can talk more about it later. Obviously, I just want to get those points out.
Good points. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for giving us a quick, very quick update. We do have the Coffee Talk for Veterans coming up on the 24th at 8 a.m. The flyers will be sent out. We'll get that out. But anyway, with that, we will conclude the meeting for today. We're adjourned for this month's meeting of the Orange County Veterans Advisory Council. Thank you.